evening. Well, I already started my talk when I was giving Zazen instruction. I've been talking recently. You know, I'm sure that my root teacher, my called a Hanshi, the person of whom I'm a disciple, Mel Weitzman, Sojourn Mel Weitzman, died on January 7th. And for a while I was giving lectures based on his teaching. And I picked things that mattered a lot to him. And I came across some notes the other day that I had written for one of the talks, and I was immediately taken by it again. He loved the notion of Jijuyu's on my self-fulfilling, self-joyous, self, this is mine, self-expressing samadhi. It's in the Bendo Wa, which you may have heard of. I hope you have. This is a wonderful translation and commentary. That, does it show up backwards on your screen? No? Okay, anyway, the Bendo Wa. And this particular one is a translation and a commentary. The translators are Shohaku Okumura and Taigen Dan Layton. You may know who these people are. You may know them. Taigen is a creature of Green Gulch. That's how I know him. Now he is, I don't know what they call him, the abbot or the guiding teacher of a sangha in Chicago. And they also, there was a commentary by Kosho Uchiyama Roshi, and they translated that. So this is the Bendo Wa, is often translated as on the endeavor of the way. But Taigen and Shohaku called it on the wholehearted practice of the way. Wholehearted practice. What a wonderful phrase. It's my intention to practice wholeheartedly. I fail, but it is my intention. My vow. Deeper than an intention, I suppose. I know it is. It is my vow, and it is deeper than an intention. So wholeheartedness. They say that for Dogen, Bendo means Zazen. Ben is the pursuit, and Do is the way or truth. It's the comes from the Chinese word Dao, T-A-O, Dao. So Bendo is the pursuit of the way or truth, which according to Dogen and me and Sojin and lots of other people is Zazen. What else is there? Really, what else is there? Well, you could call it, talk on the practice of Zazen, wholehearted practice of Zazen. Or on pursuit of the way, but I like talk on wholehearted practice of Zazen. So we practice Zazen and see what happens. Right? You have an intention. But the intention is, the intention is just practice Zazen. Just Sit down, get quiet, pay attention, see what happens. Wholeheartedly. Wholeheartedly let go of discursive thought. Wholeheartedly honor the curve in your lower back. Wholeheartedly notice if your chin is sticking out or your head is falling forward. Wholeheartedly make the adjustment. Wholeheartedly notice your hand mudra. Is it collapsing? Is it falling open? Are you, for some reason, pressing your thumbs against each other? Are your fingernails too long? Wholeheartedly pay attention to these things. Is your mouth closed? Is it closed too hard? The usual instruction is with teeth and lips both shut. Someone one time understood that to mean that she should be pressing her teeth together, practically grinding them, I think. I think she gave herself a headache. No, just shut. Shut your mouth. And put your tongue against the front roof of your mouth. That's where it naturally is. I remember getting the instruction and thinking, God, that sounds so sort of complicated and difficult. And then I realized, oh, that's where my tongue usually is. That's where it kind of rests. Wholeheartedly. And the instruction in Bendo Wa is to practice Jijuyu Sanmai. I'm going to read the first couple of paragraphs of the text. Uh-oh. I don't know if you heard that. My dog is growling at I don't know what. Probably nothing. If she starts up, she barks at the mail letter carrier. Who knows? All right. So a talk on the wholehearted practice of the way, Bendo Wa. All Buddha Tathagatas together have been simply transmitting wondrous Dharma and actualizing Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, incomparable awareness. Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi, it used to be what we said in the chanting the Heart Sutra. In the three worlds, all Buddhas depend on Prajna Paramita, and we say now, and attain unsurpassed, complete, perfect enlightenment. But they used to say, and attain Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. Maybe better, because it's hard to define it anyway. And when it's in Sanskrit, you can't grasp it so much as we often do. But at any rate, there is one wondrous Dharma that actualizes Anuttara Samyak Sambodhi. There is an unsurpassable, unfabricated, wondrous method. This wondrous Dharma, which has been transmitted only from Buddha to Buddha without deviation, has as its criterion Jijuyu Sanmai. And I wrote down, the samadhi of self-fulfillment and enjoyment, the samadhi of receiving and using the self. Uchiyama says the samadhi or concentration on the self when it simply receives and accepts its function or its spiritual position in the world. Nishijima said that it's the state of natural balance which we experience when making an effort without an intention or aim, without an intentional aim. Can't read my own handwriting. So there's this wondrous Dharma, and as its criterion, it's Jijuyu Sanmai, self-employing, self-enjoying, self-fulfilling. of receiving and using. Yeah, everybody is was stretching for words. He goes on, Dogen goes on. For disporting oneself freely in this samadhi, practicing zazen in upright posture is the true gate. Although this dharma is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifested without practice. It is not attained without realization. When you let go, the dharma fills your hands. It is not within the boundary of one or many. When you try to speak, it fills your mouth. I think I'll stop there. That's enough for the rest of your life. I think that it's difficult to find words because this self-receiving, self-employing, self-disporting, I love that word, disporting. I think of a bunch of dolphins disporting freely in the waves. Can we disport freely in our zazen? Yeah, not always. And it's always available, as I'm sure you know. And maybe even when there's popcorn mind, you know, I think of a popcorn machine at a movie. You remember movie theaters? At a movie theater, when it's popping the corn, and our minds are like that sometimes. Even then, if you can accept that wholeheartedly as what is right now, without getting tangled, without criticizing yourself, without getting on the train of thought, that's jujitsu samurai. Usually we add extra, and we bring our sense of self, our belief in a separate self, our desperate longing. I think it is a desperate longing, at least some of the time, often. Our desperate longing for permanence and safety. We bring that so much, our self-protection, our grasping after our views. It's exhausting. But what is hard to express, though, I think, and please interrupt me if it isn't so much, I think you might not understand exactly, but I might not be explaining well enough, because one of my many faults is to intuit connections and not make them, not express them. Not to mention, I've been thinking about this and sitting with it and so on for a couple months now, so I feel suffused with it. So what I think is difficult to express is how the self comes into this, right? It's self-enjoying, self-receiving samadhi. Because usually we think, no, you're supposed to let go of yourself. You don't have a self. The Heart Sutra says, no. One of the marks of existence is no self, right? And here this text is saying, enjoy it, employ it, receive it, accept it. How do we understand this? And Mel used to talk about it in these terms, that we need a sense of self. Right? You need it in order to function in the world. Right? If you were totally embraced, engrossed in no self. You couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear you. I couldn't talk. If I were just one with the universe, it's not very useful. I often say, don't get stuck there. But we need to see the self for what it is. You know, it is that which helps us discriminate. It helps us not walk into a chair. And helps me to choose words to try to express something that's ridiculous to use words for. Look at the dolphin. Just be a dolphin. Just have that image. Sit down. Get quiet, pay attention, and let the dolphins go. But don't get attached to the dolphins. Anyway, the self, the way Sojin used to talk about it, Mel and Sojin are the same person. Does everybody understand that? When I first started, there was an instruction at Berkeley about how to go to Doksan, and it said, da-da-da-da-da, Mel, da-da-da-da-da, Sojin. So I thought they were two different people. It was a long time before I understood that that was not the case. So I use the names kind of interchangeably. Anyway, Sojin used to say that the self should be about the size of a small cantaloupe or a softball and just be here, just over here, sitting quietly doing its job. And instead, what we do is we make it a beach ball and hold it right here. And that's what is a problem. Maybe it's the problem that we get an inflated sense of ourselves. And we cling to it. And we do have to let it go, and it's not easy because it's familiar. It's what we know. I had an experience it when I was at Tassajara in the monastery. One of those kind of physical experiences, you have it, and it wasn't exactly something I saw. It was more something I knew, with my prajna kind of knowing. And then as soon as it happened, a moment later, then I started talking to myself about it and I separated from it. But first I just had it. And it was this sense that I was carrying around a big sack of shit. And right here, right where the beach ball sometimes is, it was right here. And I did not want to let it go, even though it didn't smell good and it was heavy. But it was warm. It protected me. You know, this is where you feel vulnerable, I think. It protected me and it was mine. And it was such a clear, strong realization that I was attached to this sense of self. And why? Because we're very afraid of simply being ourselves. You know, allowing your Buddha nature to uncover itself, say. Allowing oneself to simply respond rather than be reactive. Allowing oneself to simply sit and let that little self, you know, we talk about small or big self. I'm talking about a really small self, softball sized self. Let it relax. Let it just be there, you know, in Zazen, You don't really need it, right? Just sit there. Where's your breath right now? Be aware of your breath. Notice your breath. Right now, close your eyes and just notice it. Is it in your belly more? Is it in your chest more? Are your breaths coming quickly? Are you pulling in the next breath rather than simply allowing it to come when it's ready? So, using the self, employing the self, is just allow it to be what it needs to be. You may want to practice and scan your body periodically. Notice, as I said before, you know, if your head fell forward or where your mudra is, or if a strong emotion has arisen, what does it feel like in your body? Not the story. That's the beach ball. But what is this? What's going on? And that, watching that, and probably lightly talking to yourself about it, that's the small self operating. And then as soon as you start commenting and beating yourself up because you did it wrong or whatever, that's the problem. That's the beach ball. It's completely extra. Not that long ago, I think maybe a year ago, Mel gave a lecture, and then there was question and answer afterwards. And this young man raised his hand and said, I'm new to this. I've only been practicing for a few months. And I noticed my thoughts just drive me crazy because they're just coming and coming, and I get stuck with them, and it's really hard. Does it get any easier? And Mel said, looked at him and he said, you know the difference between you and me? And the kid says, no. And Mel said, I have thoughts, but they don't bother me. They don't bother me. What would that be like? I hope you know. You know, sometimes when you're sitting, you know, especially if you're sitting like a one day sitting, that kind of thing, but also in regular zazen, there's just sitting. There's not I'm breathing or I'm sitting, my knee. There's just sitting. There's just breath breathing. There's an awareness. A student of mine once said, not long ago, he was talking about zazen. He said that, it's the difference is I hear the birds, but I don't listen to them. So the softball heard the words, but didn't need to comment on them. Didn't need to try to figure out what bird it was. Didn't need to say, oh, isn't that beautiful? Just heard them. Maybe also heard a truck go by. What would it be like? Just disporting freely in the Dharma. He said, when you let go, the Dharma fills your hands. When you try to speak, it fills your mouth. It fills your hands. When you stop grasping, there's wholeheartedness. When the gesture is this, there's wholeheartedness. So often, the gesture is this, sometimes really tight, sometimes just like that. When the gesture is this, Then the Dharma fills your hands. Then the myriad things come forth and realize themselves. And you can simply be there. You don't have to be in charge. You don't have to defend yourself. What would that be like? The Dharma fills your hands. And when you try to speak, it fills your mouth, which you could understand two ways. One is when you try to speak, there's just silence. There are times when it's hard to talk because there is the silence. I don't know if you experience that. I do sometimes when I lecture, especially during Sesshin. It's difficult. Difficult. But the talk that comes, the words that come out of that silence represent my heart, represent your heart. Another way of understanding it, of course, is when you're totally full of the Dharma, then you're very, the Dharma comes forth spontaneously from your words. And it's Dogen, so it probably means both and three other things we haven't thought of. But he says that although the Dharma is abundantly inherent in each person, it is not manifested without practice. And you know that. You know, you, when you sit Zazen regularly, something settles. You can feel it. And that settledness, that I'm debating between saying no need to protect yourself and a less diminishing need to protect yourself. That becomes more apparent. There's less of a sense of being vulnerable, which implies vulnerable to something, and more of a sense of openness, just openness. But it is not manifested without practice. I think we have to sit zazen. We have to settle. We have to arouse this wholehearted practice, this wholeheartedness. We have to, I think, arouse practice on the level of vow. I intend to practice wholeheartedly. I intend to sit zazen. I intend to sit up straight. I intend to let go of discursive thinking. I intend to pay attention to my body and my breath. I intend to know where my breath is. Mel once told me that a good Zen student always knows where her breath is. Well, but, and I've been practicing with that since that must have been 40 years ago. And I still think about it and I still do it. And I don't often have a sense of where my breath is. However, if you asked me where it was, I would know. This is an intimate connection. And that is what we call a fruit of practice. And it's completely available. It's nothing esoteric about it. Just sit zazen wholeheartedly. It's not manifested without practice, and it's not attained, which is a troubling word, but I'm not going to quibble. It is not attained without realization. And I am not. I just think we have to be careful not to set ourselves up that I have to have realization, that if I don't have an enlightenment experience, then I'm not doing it right. And the only thing you're not doing right is grabbing after it. and insisting and setting it up as some sort of. I was going to say, I think I'm debating a goal will do, setting it up as a goal. However, I think you set it up, one sets it up as a barrier. The new word, there's a barrier goal. Uchiyama says in opening the hand of thought, I think it is, one should have a direction, but not a goal. And I say one should have an intention, a vow, but not something to grasp after. Hold it this way. Hold it this way. Open your hand and then see what happens. Just sit down and get quiet and pay attention and allow your little self to disport freely in the Dharma. What time? We're supposed to end at 8:30, is that right?
Yes, that's our usual time to end.
Okay. I think I'm gonna stop. I would like to hear what you have to say or what you think about this. It feels challenging to be told you need a self. Mm-hmm. You have one. But it's not what you think.
Well, we have a practice now, Mary, of people raising their hand in the reaction site or raising the hand through the chat and otherwise raising their hand. So can you see everybody to call on them, or would you like me to call on them?
I can see one page, and then because there are 29 participants, so there are four, and then if people reappear on the second page, which I've never understood.
Well, if people raise their hand, they'll come up to the front.
I understand about raising hands. A little yellow hand shows up usually.
Yeah. So Oscar has his hand up.
Well, I'll take your word for it. Oh, there it is. Okay. Well, I see a thumbs up, which will do. Hi, Oscar.
Hi, Mary. Thank you very much for your talk about self. You mentioned, big self and no self. What I understood you to say was that big self and small self. I understood you to say small self is necessary, and really we should keep it about the size of a softball so it can be useful to us. I wonder if you could say something about big self, which I kind of equate with maybe the place where the breath comes from, or the place when small self is not displacing maybe the energy in the room, the room of your skull. I wonder if you could say something about that.
Well, I think of big self as, you know, it's one of those phrases or words that keep defining themselves to you, I don't know, for the rest of your life. And one way I understand it as the absolute or the one or the universe, something like that. And so, or maybe Buddha nature. None of those words, I could always talk about them and the phrases, but they don't have a really clear definition. you know, when you hear somebody starts talking about one of them, and pretty soon they're talking about two or three of them. But I think that I think of it as a big self, as the universal self. And we are it. It is us. And we operate through the small self. But you have to have the small self in order to walk around and in order to manifest in the world. It's just the problem is that we make it into something too big and then we cannot enjoy it.
Which self realizes and appreciates self-fulfilling samadhi?
Well, probably both, but I think that he's talking about how to sit zazen as a human being, which is somebody with a, you know, a small self. It's impermanent, it's da 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 da, but it's there. And what we need to do is find a way to not let it be in charge, but let the flow of the Dharma, let the Dharma be in charge. You know, like in Genjo Koan, he says, let the myriad things come forth and experience themselves. And we're talking about some examples here recently. A man whom some of you have met named Steve Trigas was saying that when he was a kid, he was tall, but he was, you know, like in middle school, say he was tall. He was very gangly and skinny, and he wasn't a tough guy. And a bully used to bully him every day and take his lunch money. And it was really awful. It was hard for him. And then one day he saw the bully going after a really little kid, and a kid that was much shorter and slighter, and you know, he was at least tall. So this bully was going after someone much smaller. And without thinking about it, he jumped up and got in front of the bully and said, "Don't you do that to him. You leave him alone." And then you know, afterwards he thought, "I didn't know I had that in me. I have no idea where that came from." So that's something he responded. He was that, you know, it's the small self that talks. It's the small self that takes the body and propels it over in front of the bully and yells and whatever. And it wasn't that self-concerned self, that self-protective self, that grasping self. It was just the heart expressing itself. So that's the distinction that I make. And I'm not going to, you guys may have your own examples. I don't want to go on and on with examples, but that kind of thing. Sometimes we just respond and respond appropriately. Is that useful?
Yes, it is. Thank you very much, Mary.
Larry?
Yes, Mary, thank you so much for your talk. I really appreciated it. And I appreciated it because we have a little group on Thursdays here in this Sangha that has ongoing studies, and we studied Bendoa for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Yet your talk brought forth something that did not arise in all those weeks of study. So I think Dogen, there's so much there, mm-hmm. that it's just wonderful to just keep, you know, listening to over and over, you hear something new. And the newness that I heard today was a little bit what Oscar was talking about. The title itself is a little bit of an irony. I think you mentioned it, self-receiving samadhi. Well, which self? And you've helped kind of give me a little perspective about that with your talk. So I appreciate it.
I think if the benda was something you could chew on for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Does everybody know how to raise your hand in this format? Really, is that a hand? Are you really
raising my hand? Yes.
I see. The background behind you is kind of yellowish.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Huh.
Anyway, yes.
Well, it was kind of amazing at this moment because I suddenly became aware lately that, you know, it's not like I get caught in my thoughts, but I'm noticing my thoughts. I'm kind of watching them. And then now that you're talking, it's like, oh, well, something else in me started playing with those thoughts. Like really turned them all around and showed me things, but in this sort of playful way.
In zazen?
Yeah.
Stop it. I don't know. I mean, I have this sense. My sense is that when I can tell, and this may be kind of a distinction you're making, when they're coming from here, then I just turn away as soon as I notice, or I let it go as soon as I notice. But when they're coming from here, I tend to allow them to arise.
Yeah.
Because I trust, it's still just a thought, but I trust these organic ones. It feels organic that arise more. And, you know, if you've been practicing for a while, sometimes you choose to let that tape run or engage with it. And I think that's okay, but I don't think that's what he means by disporting freely in the Dharma. I'm not sure.
Well, to say more what it means.
Well, I think that he means allowing it to flow freely and not engaging with the thoughts at all. But no telling. And I ask, you know, in the Genjo Koan, you know, it says, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. And then to study the self is to forget the self. But it does say, study the self. And I asked Shohaku Okamura one time after a meeting about that. I asked him if he thought that the studying the self included studying your own nitty-gritty stuff and your I don't know if I use the word shadow, but just really looking at this one, not just looking at what is the self. It doesn't exist. It's ephemeral. Can you find the self? Is it here? No. I mean, yeah, do that. But also look at your hindrances, look at your habits and so on. Anyway, so I asked him if it included, he thought that Dogen also meant, you know, to just look at your stuff. And he said, oh, of course, absolutely. It's one of the many reasons I love him dearly. Because he doesn't go, you know, he doesn't go off into la-la land.
I guess that's kind of what I meant. Because, I mean, like, for example, I suddenly became aware that I was enjoying the experience of somebody agreeing with me. Oh. And then, you know, it's sort of like this playful voice comes in and says, ha-ha, you know, what's that? What about enjoying someone who disagrees with you, you know?
Yeah, well, please.
But it had that quality of coming from some other place, and you know, and it had a kind of playful quality to it.
Yeah. So, June.
Thank you, Mary. As we were talking here, I made a connection. I'll see what you think of this connection between a self-receiving samadhi and grandmother mind. So it could be that this samadhi is a lot like grandmother mind in that it receives this broken down deluded self wholeheartedly and without judgment, and just embraces whatever is coming. I think you said as much, but it was you know, this idea, I just had this image of the grandmother mind, you know, just this receiving, receptive, non-judging, loving presence that's taking everything in and not rejecting us.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, does everybody know that comes from the instructions to the Tenzo, which is also Dogen, and has a wonderful commentary by Uchiyama. Anybody else? Oscar?
A thought arises in regard to disporting. I was reading recently something Ajo had written, a recollection of his of a discussion with conversation with Dogen, and Ajo brought up Nanchuan's cat, and I really don't remember the exact dialogue, but in Ajo's telling, Dogen just had a lot of very free thoughts, because he just and I don't remember the question, but Dogen was saying, well, if I were Nanchuan, I would have said for the students, da da da, or I would have said da da da. He was just coming out with all the possibilities that someone could say, and he just seemed to be disporting verbally as he's wont to do. So I think he was expressing the Dharma there in a very, I think he was enjoying himself.
It's like a Dharma fountain. He was being a Dharma fountain. Okay, I think we should probably stop.